Welcome back to the number one sports podcast in the year 2025. It's a new year. It's not a new podcast. I'm Connor of Teen It Up with C and V. As always, with my co-host, the V himself, Vladdy, back on our side of the pond after a nice trip over to the European side for the holiday. Happy holidays, happy New Year's, all that good jazz. Welcome back, mate.
Thank you. It's crazy to hear you saying welcome to 2025. This is now the fourth different calendar year in which we've kind of been running this podcast starting in 2022. So
Wow.
that's kind of crazy to think about when you hear it that way.
Yeah.
But back from Bulgaria, had a great trip. Was a lot more exciting and eventful than I thought it would be, so I'm happy for that. Had a getting wonderful time, played some soccer with family. So I don't know. I feel like right off the top of my head, I can't really give more specific details, but I'm sure as I see you and as I see others listening, it'll be more to discuss. But other than that, we're back. We've got college football playoffs, the NFL. You want to talk about the Red Wings? How are you before we get into that?
I'm good. I had a good holiday, relatively quiet. Because our last show came out on Christmas Eve. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't have much to say. I worked till most of the days in between. Excuse me, Christmas and the New Year, and I don't really have much to report other than that I'm ready for just an electric 2025 with this show. So we can get right into it. You mentioned the topics today. We can kind of start with the mixed bag topics. I'll start with the Red Wings. Since we last spoke, I over the Christmas break, that is the 25th and 26th, the entire league takes off. The Red Wings fire head coach Derek Lalonde. It can't really come as too much of a surprise. I think some people, maybe myself included, were surprised that, given the Ilitch's lack of, firing coaches in the middle of the season, and Yzerman's kind of extreme patience with this process, that they were going to do it at this point, and it needed to be done. You brought in Todd McClellan, who was actually the assistant coach of the Red Wings, Steve Yzerman's last season. He was the assistant coach when they last won a Stanley Cup in 2008, and then since then he has coached in San Jose, where they were pretty much a playoff team every year, but kind of were notoriously chokers come playoff time. And then he had two kind of turnaround jobs, where he got them bad teams to consistent playoff play, but again was fired by the time he got the team over the hump. And that was Edmonton and LA were his last two stops. He's not really known as a player's coach. He's a guy that's going to get on people. He plays a very defensive style. For hockey watchers, if you've seen the new penalty kill, it's much more passive. If you see the way they play when they're up just one goal, even early in the game, it's a 1-1-2-2, which you don't really see much in the NHL given the speed of the game now. So it's a different style. It's a different approach of coach. And while like Newsy Lalonde seemed like a great guy, it just seemed like a guy who maybe couldn't get his message through as a head coach, and the move needed to be made. The only thing I really need to add, I guess, is I mean, they get spanked like the night he got hired by Toronto, and then they've won three straight since then, including a comeback win last night in Columbus. Is Steve Yzerman's comments at his press conference, and he was quoted as saying, well, to a reporter, kind of getting a little testy and being like, well, if you've got a better idea on how to rebuild, I'd love to hear it. Like, we're all ears. And it's really like a guy who is coy and calm and doesn't really have much to say and kind of keeps his cards hidden for the first time. I felt like showed some kind of bite back of like, oh shit, like this isn't exactly how I planned. And he even admitted that it's maybe going a little slower than he thought, in that they knew that this group this year wasn't going to necessarily win a Stanley Cup, but he thought he could get more out of this group than what this group was giving him, and that's why he made the move. I think McClellan now puts Yzerman's clock, truly puts Yzerman on the clock now, in that I don't think, like, from an actual perspective, not what I think should happen, is now he is the clock has started, right? You now are on your second head coach, and this is a you kind of have to fall with the ship because they're not going to pay for three head coaches, right? So this, if this fails, and this could be this time next year we're talking about this, it officially puts Yzerman on the hot seat. He's not there yet, but the clock has started by him having to make this move.
Sure. Yeah, nothing to add there. I'm not going to sit here and provide some detailed insight. Not a hockey nerd. I guess I'll just say this guy might have the longest leash I've ever seen from a GM who hasn't done actually anything as a GM for this team. Now, granted, we know as a player what he did, and we know what he did in Tampa Bay, but his tenure as general manager of Detroit Red Wings started before the pandemic. So that does need to be mentioned. I agree with you from a logistical standpoint, not necessarily like a hockey one. Your clock has to start. You cannot have an unlimited leash forever. Sooner rather than later, someone has to sit there and say to you, "Hey, Stevie, it's time to do what we pay you to do, and that's put a team together that can win a Stanley Cup."
And it's like it is the frustration is that it hasn't happened yet, and he hasn't done anything to tarnish that. It couldn't happen is like kind of the frustrating part the other way too, but I digress. Let's get on to some more important topics. Michigan State basketball, they'll play tonight as we're recording on Friday. Start Big Ten play. I know they played two in December, one or two in December, two in December. Minnesota and Nebraska. They played Western since we last recorded. No need to even talk about that. We'll move on. College football. College football playoff happened the last couple days with the Georgia Notre Dame game getting delayed for the terrorist attack on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve. Let's start from the top, I guess. Penn State on New Year's Eve kicks it off. Penn State, Boise State, 31-14, Penn State. And James Franklin, not a big enough game apparently because they just kind of looked like they were. It was just honestly, if you want to break the game down in one sentence, it was a Power Five school against a non-Power Five school in the trenches.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of similar to the Clemson versus Texas game, where it wasn't necessarily a stereotypical blowout like we saw in other games, but it was not necessarily competitive. Right off the bat, Penn State explodes on the bat of two Genty fumbles, one lost, one not. Build a 14-0 lead, and you think, well, here we go again. Here we go again. Because at this point, we hadn't seen the other quarterfinal games yet, and you're like, we're ready for another blowout. And then thankfully, Penn State coughs it up themselves. Boise State's able to score and at least make it. Again, like I said, close on the scoreboard, but not necessarily close in actual competition. And then they just kind of, like you say, they leaned on him in the trenches. They were bigger, they were faster, they were stronger, they were more talented, and they won the football game. And I don't think there's really much to talk about in this sense.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was a little worried with some of the Penn State play calling and that they seem to be able to run the ball at will, especially Katron Allen in that one, and that especially early on, he was getting 6 yards before he was even touched. And they kept on wanting to spread it out to like down the field throws with Allen and some of their receivers, which is really not their game. Their game is running the ball, establishing the run, and then breaking it out of some RPO, some play action to kind of down the middle or to some more Tyler Warren like routes, not really throwing the ball downfield like that. So that's something to look forward to, you know, in the next game. They're going to have to do that against Notre Dame because they're not going to be able to run the ball for 8 yards a carry given the way that Notre Dame's trenches have played themselves. But we'll get into more of a preview for that next week.
I have nothing else.
Next was Arizona. What was the actual final? We'll just say what?
Arizona did not play in the college football.
Yeah, right. Sorry. Arizona State, Texas. Texas finds a way to win this game in double overtime. I mean, this has like been really the only truly like nail biter game in these playoffs, obviously. So there's just so much to talk about, and that you came out and this game looked like it was going to look like every other game. 17-3 at the half, and then a vomiting, just like dry heaving white running back named just destroys Texas in the second half. And they boom, boom, boom. It was quick. It was like, what was it on game clock wise that they scored 14 points in?
Oh, it was probably 2 or 3 minutes. Before we get actually get into the game, I just want to say this was it. This was the one where you turn around and you say, "You see, Vladdy, you're stupid. This is why we expand the playoffs." This game was super exciting to watch. You have a picked to finish last Arizona State, runs the table in the Big 12, shows up here, and honestly, they hung toe-to-toe with Texas. The blue blood, this was the game. Unfortunately, it's the only game we've had that's really been that way. But this was an absolute classic. It was also a super weird one, especially that second half. Like you said, Texas jumps out to a quick two score lead, and then you're sitting there, you're saying, "Oh my God, are we getting another blowout?" Kind of like the Penn State Boise State game. But the ASU defense was able to settle down. They went into damage limitation mode. They only gave up, I think, three further points after that just fury start by Texas, where they went two plays, touchdown, punt return, touchdown. And then it was 17-3 at the half. And then Arizona State's opening possession ends up in a goal line stand, only for the very next play to be a fumble. And Quinn Ewers has to drop on it, if I remember correctly, to prevent a touchdown and having it be a safety. So you go 17-5, Arizona State a little bit of momentum. Their following drive, they get down again to the goal line pretty much. Another Texas stand. This time they kick a field goal, 17-8. Texas goes right down the field, 24-8. And you're thinking to yourself, Arizona State feels they have to feel so good about themselves. They had a great start to this half, and somehow they're down more points than they were before. And this brings me to kind of one of the first moments that I kind of had was I think Sark had one of the most moronic games I've ever seen from a head coach in every single aspect of the game. So at 23-8, so we haven't kicked the extra point yet. I do not understand why he's not going for two. I've said this about Jim Harbaugh and the Kenny Walker Michigan State game in 2021, where when Michigan went up 29-14, why is Jim Harbaugh not going for two? Because once you, if you get that, the difference between 15 and 16 points is nothing. It's a 2-point conversion fail or not, and that's already going to happen. But the difference between 16 and 17 is a completely different game script, a completely different play calling. Texas could have taken Cam Scadabo out of the game completely, and they didn't. I've never understood why coaches do this. If you're already up 15, go for
So
fucking
it's
two.
the argument is to get the three scores. I'm doing
Yes.
the math in my head.
Yes,
Okay.
exactly. You get to three scores and you completely change the way the game has to be played, the
Right.
pacing of it, what the other team can and can't do on the offensive side and the defensive. They have to start selling out to try and stop you. You get to go into a more of a I'm a kind of cat and mouse of when am I going to take a shot, not this kind of more original game plan, if you will. But I thought completely horrible from Sark management there. And as we kind of, as you've mentioned, Arizona State afterwards goes touchdown. Awful decision by Quinn Ewers throwing some nuke pass to Isaiah Bond, interception, and then right back down the field, trick play, Cam Scadabo, 42 yards, boom, you blink, and suddenly it's 24-24. Then Texas gets it back. And they kind of march down the field, and it's, I think, first and 15 at that, if I remember correctly, it was like the 35-yard line. And about a minute and a half left, or I think minute and 45 was what it was. Arizona State has one or two timeouts, and Sark comes out throwing. And it's like, what are you doing? Incomplete pass, stupid halfback draw to try and waste a timeout. And you could have not completely killed the clock unless you'd gotten a first down. You could have set yourself up to completely take Arizona State out of the way to go down the field. Didn't do it. Now, then we know Bert Auburn goes full Bert Auburn and misses the first one, and we'll get to the second one, but you miss the field goal. Arizona State then gets a chance to go down. They pretty much get to the 50, and then you have the no targeting call, which how is in 2025? Or at that point, it was, oh, yeah, it's 2025 at that point, not even 2024. In 2025, you have that video. How is that not targeting?
I'm blanking on the hit now. I'm trying to
So
remember how I felt about it now.
it was over the middle of the field, defenseless receiver. Now, granted, the guy didn't launch, and I think the crown of the helmet was like his face was up, not down, but he went right into a defenseless receiver's head. Like, I don't understand how that wasn't.
I think I remember feeling that one could have gone either way. But I it's the optics now. because we don't know what targeting is now, is the
True.
problem.
Very true.
Is like I think back to the because it was the exact same play, kind of like he didn't they went head to head, but like he didn't necessarily launch the crown of the helmet like you're talking about in the Big 12 championship that an Arizona State player made on the Iowa State quarterback, that it was just a quarterback and he came in full speed and that you had to call it targeting.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too much different than this hit. And that's part of the problem now is you've now made a rule that is so subjective. And it reminds me of like goalie interference in hockey.
Yeah, I mean the catch rule sometimes is this bad, and soccer handball has gotten this bad where people don't know what they're doing and they bring so many stupid things. And as we talk about it, there was a potential targeting call on the other side where on another deep ball to I think Isaiah Bond, an Arizona State guy, comes in and kind of took his head off. And they didn't call targeting there. So I agree with the premise of with how quickly the game moves and how arbitrarily this rule is defined, where it's like, oh, forcible contact. Like, what's forcible? Like, please define. Talk about launching, talk about crown. Don't just say, oh, forcible contact. And so I thought it should have been targeting. I guess it wasn't. They have to punt it away. Texas gets it back, goes down the field again, gets in line for another game-winning field goal. You have the video of Sark sitting there dapping up his guy
He
on the
iced his own
sideline.
kicker. He
Yeah,
iced
no.
his own kicker. That's exactly what that was. He
He's sitting
iced
there
his
giving
own
him
damn
the
kicker.
he's giving him probably what must be the worst post-game or pre or hype speech ever. Guy comes in, pulls it,
Doink.
doink. Which, first of all, the doink has to be one of the funniest sounds in
Oh,
football
yeah.
or in all of sports, to be honest, because like people get quiet because they're like, oh my God, this is so close to going in or not. They don't know. And then you just hear doink. It's amazing.
Yeah. And he was like, he's funny because I think a lot of people were like, dude, screw this Texas kid. Who's this guy like smiling and laughing? He just missed the last one. He's got this crazy hair. And then he goes out and doinks it after a 30-second speech from
Wasn't he
Sark.
also doinking field goals against Georgia in the SEC title, or at least missing them flat out, if I
I
remember
remember him
correctly?
struggling. It was something, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean this kicker's funny. All those announcers did was talk about his experience. I was like, dude, what experience? His experience of missing kicks in big games? What experience we got here? But
Yeah. Well, I guess it was like comparatively speaking, like they talked about the kicking situation for Arizona State, like that. There were a couple of situations where they did have to go for it in situations where a normal team probably wouldn't have, because I want to say their kicking was like 30 something percent this year or something
yeah,
like that.
that's wild. I honestly, I think what I heard was they had like a third string place kicker at this point, which that's unfortunate. But game gets into overtime. Arizona scores a TD, gets Texas to 4th and 13 before a beautiful pass from Quinn Ewers over the top ties it up. Very next play on the ensuing second overtime, Texas scores again. And then Arizona State gets behind the chains. I think it was 3rd and 8. Sam Levitt's forced to kind of make a throw into coverage. It's picked off, and Arizona State loses. But beautiful game. The fact that we could just spend 10 minutes about this talking, just what happened on the field is what we've been missing. It's what we want from all of the playoff games. I don't know. Is anything else there on that specific game?
No, it's just like looking, my brief outlook is with Texas is there's still so many questions on their offense for me. I know they have all the weapons around Quinn Ewers. That defense though is going to be Ohio State's biggest challenge in the playoffs yet, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, Sark, atrocious game. Quinn Ewers, while he made some incredible throws at the end of the game, I thought he was largely mediocre again
I
with some
agree.
stupid decisions and some bad accuracy. But Texas is still playing. Good for them. They got a week and a little over a week to figure it out. I think they're the Friday game, if I'm not mistaken, next week. So they'll have some time to try and figure it out, and it just looks like they might be running into a buzzsaw. So,
That leads into the next game here in the Rose Bowl. Ohio State comes in and plays one of the best halves of football I've ever seen. And that I'll be honest, I went up and just laid in bed for most of the second half because I was just like, this game's over, and didn't even watch the second half. 41 Ohio State, 21 Oregon. Probably the biggest statement so far of the playoffs, I'd say, by one team
oh,
individually.
absolutely. I mean, a 34-0 start to the game. at that point, like you said, it was never in doubt. You can watch the second half, not watch the second half. That first quarter, Jeremiah Smith running around. He even called the shot before. He's like, if we see you guys in man, we're throwing the shots. They started throwing the shots, and he came down with everything. He is at 18 years old. He has an NFL body. He has NFL athleticism, NFL hands, NFL route running. It's insane. He's one of those rare players where it's like maybe college kids need to be able to go straight to the league, or maybe there needs to be a one and done, when like the reality is like most of you guys are not ready. Actually, let me rephrase. Almost every single one of you guys are not ready. I don't remember the last time I've seen an NFL player at this age. Like
No,
he's outrageous.
it's funny because like the next person that comes to mind is Ryan Williams at Alabama, and he's in the same grade as them.
Yeah,
So
the only thing that like I
he
can
doesn't
maybe,
quite have the body
yes.
that Jeremiah Smith does.
Ryan
I agree
Williams
with
is
that.
faster, but he's also like I think he's like 190 soaking wet. Jeremiah Smith's like 210. He's built, he's got the speed. It's incredible. So you're right though, him and Ryan Williams were probably the two best receivers in college this year as 18-year-olds. So that's incredible.
Shout out
Honestly,
Michigan beating Alabama. Sorry.
oh yeah, the defense for Ohio State was all over Oregon. That's something that you didn't see in the first matchup. Caleb Downs, they were watching that or watch it. They pretty much sit there and just tell him, "Hey man, go have fun." Like he plays this just free roaming safety, staring at the eyes of the quarterback and moving to where he thinks that's going to be. He had Dylan Gabriel in hell. He could have had three or four first half interceptions that and just being like pass deflections. It was like they couldn't do anything. 34 nothing. They shut it down. The starters are out by the fourth quarter. They're sitting there waving everything at that. It was outrageous.
It was the biggest surprise to me in that, not that Ohio State came out and like the offense was flashy and it seems like they're really in a role with what they want to do now, but how little of a response Oregon had on offense. They were the most explosive offense all year, arguably. And to just come out with no response multiple times, not even like a first down or something. It was right back to them, three plays and out, maybe one first down here and there in that first half. And sure, they did okay in the second half when the game didn't mean anything. But I was just shocked. And I know you're the Buckeye stan, and I'm starting to hop on that wagon because this was just an absolute statement. And I'm not going to go as far to say, because we're going to talk about the next game, and it's another team that I think has surprised me as far as like having a shot to beat this team, and that I'm not so sure this game was the national championship anymore. I know Ohio State is still is got to be everyone's favorite right now. They've looked by far the best in their two games, but I guess that kind of takes us into the next game, unless you want to add anything.
I was going to say one more thing. I still do think those were the two best teams, but what I will say is I don't think Ohio State can replicate that performance. I don't think whoever they're playing is going to be stupid enough to leave Jeremiah Smith one-on-one, or I don't think you're going to see that level of game from a Caleb Downs, from a JT Tuimoloamolo, from a Jack Sawyer again. Like I said, every single thing that Ohio State did worked. And so I just don't think they can replicate that. And I'm with you where I'm not going to sit here and just blindly start like beating my chest and saying Ohio State by a million every week. Because that's not the case. There's obviously still good teams left. It's just
Six point favorites against Texas right
that's
now.
the most insane performance I've seen of the season. But
That
yeah,
moves into the
last
game
game.
yesterday. Oregon, sorry. Notre Dame 23, Georgia 10. Low scoring, boring
That
game.
was bad. Just
But
flat out bad.
and I a lot of that has to do with Gunnar Stockton, and I was kind of like really unimpressed for the game plan of what they had for Gunnar Stockton. Well, besides the fact they didn't block for him because he was like getting hit on every single play, they really didn't have like he it felt like he was taking way too many shots. They didn't really ever make him feel comfortable. I was just really unimpressed with the game plan or lack thereof that Kirby Smart had for a backup quarterback, and it showed against Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I think what makes it even worse is it's not like you only had 1 week to figure this out. Georgia, you had a bye week. You've been sitting for a month, and this is what you come out with. I'm absolutely correct with you now. This is not to try and play down Notre Dame's defense, because Notre Dame's defense is incredible, might be the best in America. But you're right. There was nothing on the Georgia side offensively. They had one play where they kind of got over the top, and then unfortunately a sideline interference has to bring it 15 yards back and kind of
That poor
killed the
kid.
momentum of that drive, forced him into a field goal. But like I said, this was a bad game. I mean, it was 3-3 with 1.5 minutes left in the first half.
Yeah.
Notre Dame drives down the field, kicks a field goal to make it 6-3, and then on the very next play with 40 seconds left, Georgia comes out trying to sling it. Oh, strip sack. Uh-oh. The very next play after that, Notre Dame touchdown, and you blinked and it's now 13-3. And then
And
you
then they
come out of
took
the
it.
20-minute halftime, Notre Dame takes the opening kickoff the other side, and it's like Notre Dame didn't really do anything on the offensive side either. It's
No.
just strip sack, one play, kickoff, and suddenly the game was out of reach for Georgia. They couldn't do anything.
I'll say this, like it didn't really do much on offense, but Riley Leonard is he's a game like he finds a way to like
Yeah.
scramble and get like find the guy when he needs to or make the run when he needs to. Like he is a gamer. I'll give him
Oh,
that.
absolutely.
I didn't go ahead.
I was gonna say he picks his moments, like you said, the scrambling. He might be one of the best, just kind of like third down, what might be a broken player. Oh my God, I need to hope someone gets open down the field, and then suddenly you look again and you blink and he's 6 yards upfield and he's got a very good shot at that first down line.
Yeah. And what impresses me about Notre Dame and why I think they are a scary threat for, I'm going to say, Ohio State, is both sides of the ball. They look big and physical. And I was so surprised at how well they dominated Georgia on both sides of the ball in the trenches. I was not expecting that. Notre Dame, in my head, maybe it's a no conference thing. Maybe it's they don't play Michigan and Michigan State anymore. Maybe it's they really haven't been a playoff team for several years now in the four team format, or really even been a threat that like I didn't know they had those kinds of guys in the trenches.
Yeah, that's a pretty good cap. I mean, the defense with the turnovers, I think they mentioned it. 32 forced turnovers in 14 football games is outrageous.
Yeah.
That massive fumble on the second drive where Georgia gets down to like the 10-yard line, maybe even closer, and then you pretty much had a Jadeveon Clowney, Vincent Smith hit where the guy times the snap count and he hits, I think it was Nate, or no, it was Trevor Etienne, because that was Trevor Etienne's first ever lost fumble. But he hit him like 6 yards in the backfield. He hadn't even taken a step with the ball yet. And the ball somehow popped 6 yards down forward, which I didn't understand how that was possible.
Yeah.
But then you had that, obviously the strip sack to kind of take that touchdown, make it a two possession game, and kind of really just put Georgia behind the eight ball and force them into passing situations where, as you kind of mentioned, the snowball effect, then the athletes could tee off again and again, and they were all over Stockton and all over Georgia. So that was a great performance as well in the Notre Dame defense. Not so much on the offense, but I also think like Georgia's defense is obviously not a pushover. They've got athletes everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much to add on that. I guess outlook as a whole is we're gonna preview the actual semifinal games next week. This was a much better week of football. I know you're gonna make the comment of well, we've only gotten one good game out of 8 tries now. And I'm gonna make an argument afterwards that that's not necessarily the point on why like this has overall been a good thing. And at the end of the day, like as somebody that loves football, is like the more football, the better thing. The more things that technically matter on paper, I'm always gonna root for. But I'll let you kind of go on your rant here.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, I think out of the 8 playoff games we've had, Arizona State's the only underdog to cover.
To even cover, wow, that's true. And well, it's
But
interesting.
I emphasize, look, I'll be fair. I emphasize underdog because obviously Ohio State was favored and they're supposed to be the 8 seed, not the 1 seed. And Notre
Right.
Dame was favored and they're supposed to be the 7 seed, not the 2 seed. But I think a lot of that had, at least on the Notre Dame Georgia one specifically, had to do with just Carson Beck.
Right.
Or lack thereof.
And my argument will be like, it as unfortunately, I think like college football, like. Part of the problem is we forget sometimes that college football and the fact that they're younger and the fact that there are larger talent gaps and they're not all professional football players, despite the fact that they get paid, is that in general, there are way more uncompetitive games on average. And it's just simply not the NFL in that nature. And that's part of why I think you're going to see this at any level, at any stage. Because like your biggest complaint was with the four team is like, well, most of those semis weren't even competitive. So like, are these games going to be even worse? And I'd argue like you add 12 teams and you're kind of getting the same games, just more of them, at least, at the very least. And I think it hasn't truly been a failure too, in the fact that the number one and number two ranked teams in the country aren't in the semis. So
Yeah.
clear, and I know that's part of the matchups, and we've talked about how kind of broken the buys system is right now with who gets them or if there should be any at all. But it makes you wonder in any given year, like when you have the number one team in the country, the number two team in the country go down and not even make the semifinal, clearly more teams deserve a shot at it. And I think that's what has been highlighted to me so far. And maybe I'm overgeneralizing and I'm using Oregon and Georgia as an example. And I know Georgia lost their quarterback, so it's a little different situation. But it is the case, and it makes you wonder, maybe, I don't know, 12 teams, maybe more than four teams do have a shot. That's, I guess, my point here.
Sure. I can agree with that. I don't think there's anything unreasonable there. You mentioned the bye thing. All four teams that got a bye all lost. And not only that, all got jumped on early. We mentioned Boise State. We mentioned Arizona State. I mean, Georgia didn't really get jumped on early, but they never could get anything done. And then obviously we all saw what happened with Oregon. So I do think change comes to the playoff, whether that's in the form of we get rid of this auto bye thing and we just go off seedings. Or I know I was talking to you about this a couple of days ago, and it's just like maybe you just expand to 16 again because you know what? You can't go backwards. Like, I think eight might be a perfect number of eight teams, no automatic bids because the conferences are not created equal, and just play and see what happens. But I don't think you can repeat this format because you look at you talk about the brokenness of the system. Texas lost to Georgia in the SEC title game and got to play Arizona State.
Well, I think it like not only are like the conferences not equal, like you said, so how can we weigh conference champions in separate conferences together, but like they're not even equal in the same conference from year to year because of these mega conferences too, and that like a Big Ten champion might not be the same team a year prior when they had to play Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, and then the next year that all they had to play was Indiana, Michigan State, and Purdue.
I agree. I agree.
So it's even harder to measure it that way too. So I agree with the conference championships kind of. I it sucks because like they shouldn't mean nothing. They will to some people. It's still good for something, and it's still bonus points and one last impression on the playoff committee. But I don't think they should be giving out byes based off that.
I guess you still get banners for conference championships. You can say those matter.
Exactly.
But no, I don't have much else. I think that there needs to be obviously massive change, and I'm sure once the football dies down and we're bored for topics in the spring and summer, I'm sure we'll come up with our own different fixes of what to do. But until that happens, I have nothing else to add on the college football playoff front.
No, we can move to the NFL. We'll start like we always do with the Lions. Lions, what was the final? 41-35, I believe.
I thought it was 34, but you might be correct.
34.
I don't
Okay.
know.
There you go. So it was something along those lines. It's been a long week, and that was Monday night. Lions get a win. It's kind of, I guess, like what this team is at this point, and it's another outstanding performance by the offense. They play a shootout. And the defense, well, looked extremely lost at times and had no answer, was able to come up with turnovers and provide get turnovers at the right time and provide the win. I don't know what else to say. Like, this is what this team is going to be from here on out, I
Oh,
think.
it
And this
has
is
to,
how you're going to have to win.
game didn't really mean anything, so I
Right.
don't have much else to say. Like you said, offense, sensational. Defense made a couple plays, but largely looked like they need help. I guess some fun stats: Kirby Joseph had more catches that game than Deebo Samuel did. One of those is supposed to catch passes. The other one is, I mean, I guess both are supposed to catch passes. Just one of them you expect to, the other one you don't really expect to. So that's a little entertaining. Debo's kind of had a funny season after some of the. I feel like there's always a little bit of arrogance with Debo Samuel, and he's kind of not fully backed it up at times.
Definitely.
But other than that, I have nothing else on the Lions.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. Outlook, like your season's on not necessarily on the line. We've talked about this off air on how much getting that one seed matters. And I think the way the defense is playing, it matters a ton. You just gotta like as little as the defense in its state right now can be on the field, from two games versus three games, I think is going to mean a world of difference. We're going to see how they look against Minnesota. As good as Minnesota's looks, believe it or not, like I'm not like amazingly terrified by them for some reason.
No, the offense moves the ball at will, but Sam Darnold still does kind of make plays where it's like, we can take advantage of this. I just think that when you look at that, is this one of the biggest regular season games we've ever seen? And I'm not talking just from, oh, look, we're Lions fans, and I'm just talking flat out NFL regular season league game. I can't remember a bigger one. Two 14 win teams playing each other this late in the season for the one seed. I can't remember one that late.
Yeah, I'd love to like for me though, like the in the playoffs versus out the playoffs is always going to mean more than like
Oh, absolutely.
but than two teams that like it's not their true season, but obviously there's humongous stakes for home field advantage the rest of the way and who gets to play essentially what could be a third time together at home. And yeah, it's going to be on Sunday night. I'm glad they flexed it that way because there's not a ton of action. Like even the one game they tried to make flexed, the Saturday night game for next week or for tomorrow, could not even mean anything by the time that game starts for the Steelers, who the Bengals would be playing anyways. So, like, I don't know. There's like we talked about this off air about how few like playoff races there are this year that to have this game on Sunday night. Like you said, it's going to be the biggest game of the season in the last game of the season, right? There's no Monday night because of Black
No,
Monday.
no, no.
Yeah.
They always go there. I guess some other things in the league. I guess the Colts Giants. I think you can talk about both sides here. On
Yeah.
one side, the Indianapolis Colts, who sit there with an outside chance at the playoffs at the time of the game, show up and do have one of the worst performances I've ever seen. You give up 45 points to the New York Giants team that hadn't scored more than 20 in about 3 months. That's pathetic. This is also a Giants team that's actively tanking, or
Yeah.
apparently not, after what we saw with Drew Lock and Malik Nabers torpedoing the Giants' chances at getting quarterback. On the Giants side, what are you doing playing Drew Lock?
Yeah, why now? Like you clearly like when you first let Daniel Jones go and you said Drew Lock's not going to play, you made the decision to not be competitive with Tommy DeVito. So why now go back to Drew? Yeah, I agree. It's like I don't know. It's like I don't get too angry with it because it's like I get angry with the front office and coaching staff for that
Oh,
kind of stuff. But
absolutely.
like the
Absolutely.
players are out there to win and play for their next contract.
I completely agree. I'm totally with you. No player's ever going to say, well, I hope the number one pick shows up so he can take my job. It doesn't work that
Right.
way.
Yeah.
But just to sit there, and I think this is now a second season in a row the Giants have torpedoed their chances at getting a quarterback. Last year, it was Drake May and Jaden Daniels, who they missed out on. This year, it'll be Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. And it's funny, the drop-off after those two quarterbacks, which, mind you, are not that great of
No.
prospects. They're not some Drake May, Jaden Daniels, or God forbid, Caleb Williams prospect. I was looking back at it. I feel like they're probably lumped in somewhere with the Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix type of prospect. And the fact
Probably.
that those are your two best, and then afterwards, it's like, Jalen Milroe, is that really QB3 in this class? Jackson Dart? Quinn
Yeah.
Ewers, if he decides to come out, this is
Carson Beck.
off. Yeah, I mean, Carson Beck's, I'm pretty sure, has already said he's coming back or he's staying in school.
Okay.
No, yeah, no, it is Car. Oh, you're right. Carson Beck is in the draft because I don't understand his decision to go because he can't even throw right now, and he's not gonna have a pro day.
Oh,
So,
Isn't he like older?
Oh
Like,
yeah.
I could be, he could be out of years. That's why.
Yeah, I don't know. That part was bewildering to me, but just
He's
incredible.
23.
Incredible by the Giants to do what they did. Incredible by the Colts to do what they did. Hilarious game. I guess one of the other things I thought was funny, the Texans Chiefs game, losing 31-2 to me is somehow funnier than getting shut out. It's like your defense got you a couple points, but then you couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Just from like a personal standpoint, I thought that was entertaining. I
That was
mean,
crazy. That wasn't a scoregami. Like
yeah, that's
31 to
also
two.
true.
How, like, when did that happen?
That's also valid. CJ Stroud, I think you talked about this last week or 2 weeks ago. He's really hit that sophomore slump, and I know he hasn't gotten help. Obviously, Stephon Diggs dead, Tank Dell dead, Nico Collins missed time earlier in the season. So it's not like he's playing at full strength and still looking this bad, but he's still missing basic throws. I remember one specifically. It's like Dalton Schultz on an under route, and he sails him by 4 yards. And it's like, dude, what are you looking at? There's nobody in
Yeah.
even the vicinity. Like, you're not pressured. There's no pressure on Schultz either. And he just sailed him. So the Texans took advantage of a bad division. They'll probably lose a playoff game to maybe the Ravens or the Steelers, whoever doesn't win that division. But that's there.
Yep.
I guess the only other game that was actually wildly entertaining, and unfortunately now it doesn't look like it really matters, is Bengals Broncos.
Yep. What a crazy game that was. You see
Yeah.
Joe Burrow's, we can like talk about the actual game, but you see Joe Burrow's response. I j literally just saw it like right before we got on air. They asked him like, do you think you should be the MVP? And he just goes, no. And they go, oh, why not? And he goes, it seems like you have to win your division. Like how blunt and honest like that is so funny. But it's true. It's like he had an all-time game again, four touchdowns, over 400 yards. T. Higgins obviously has the monster night too. You're gonna have to pay him, or he's gonna be in a different jersey, probably a different jersey the way the Bengals spend money. And that game goes back and forth. Zach Taylor kind of butchers it with the clock
Oh
situation
my
at the end
God.
there. I on first look, I like was like okay with the touchdown thing, and realistically, like, yes, he should have ran out the. I can objectively say now he probably should have ran out the clock and just kicked the field goal. But realistically, 120, I think it was, with one timeout, needing a full-on touchdown should not be a problem for your against a rookie quarterback at your place should not be a problem.
I agree
And
with that.
for that defense, it apparently is.
Yeah, I think Zach Taylor, assuming they don't end up making the playoffs, which the way the Chiefs are resting everybody, I don't think the Broncos lose at home with their season on the line. But I honestly think if you're the Bengals, you probably look to fire Zach Taylor.
Really?
I think you throw your hat into the Ben Johnson sweepstakes and say, listen, man, you're one of the most creative people there is. You have Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, potentially T. Higgins, like you said, with do they or don't they want to spend some money at your disposal? Go crazy. It doesn't get any more creative than that.
Yeah, I love that idea. I just keep going back to the fact that he's so cheap. Zach Taylor, I don't like it's not disclosed how much they make, but I want to say it's like known he's like one of the least, like he's like the bottom in terms of salary for any coach, basically. And he took them to a Super Bowl not too long ago. So, like, is he going to want to go and hire the new flashy toy that Ben Johnson's going to get kind of an open checkbook at a lot of other places?
That's a
So.
very valid counterpoint. I feel like we always remember that coaches get, or we always forget that coaches get paid too, and you're right. Like I'm sitting there thinking, oh yeah, the Bengals don't spend at a salary cap level, but if you're firing one coach, you're paying him, and Ben Johnson is not going to be cheap. He's probably going
No.
to walk in as a top five paid coach
Yeah.
in the league.
I would imagine he's high teens. I think Andy Reid is around 20, what Andy Reid makes.
Yeah. So yeah, I that valid counterpoint. That's probably a great reason why they don't do it. I just think they should. I mean, that like this defense is unacceptable. The
Yeah.
continued slow starts in September are unacceptable. Where it's like the age-old thing of like you can't win the Super Bowl or your division in September, but you can lose it.
Yeah.
You can absolutely like if you start every season 1-4, 1-3, you can absolutely lose it. And we've seen that with the Bengals year over year.
I just, yeah, you're talking me into it. On face, it's like realistically, it's just this year that's a fireable offense. It's like last year, Joe Burrow goes down mid-season anyways. You lost your
Sure.
best player. The year before that, you were in the AFC Championship. The year before that, you were in the Super Bowl.
All right, you've now talked me out of firing him. Look at us go.
So I
Yeah,
don't know, like, but this year I agree is unacceptable what's happened. So, and if
yeah.
you come, here's where I guess I'll meet you in between. If you came out assuming it doesn't work out this week, which obviously the Bengals need to win, the Broncos need to lose. The Broncos are 10-point favorites against the Chiefs, who are playing nobody because they've already locked the one seed. Say that doesn't work out the way you want it to. Bengals miss the playoffs. If they get off to another 1-2, 1-3 start, yeah, I'd say fire him.
Yeah,
But
I know
then, we're just going down the rabbit hole with this guy, with
that.
Zach Taylor here. Because then you're wasting another year at Joe Burrow with an interim head coach at that point. So.
That's yay. Look, man, look at us, couple Metro Detroit people doing Cincinnati sports talk.
Yeah, right. That was a good radio, so like 3-minute radio segment for Cincinnati's like 5 o'clock radio.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that I think that clock mismanagement was so grotesque that I think it elevates like it that was up there with the Eberfluses of the world of like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Initially going for it, then not going for it, getting Chase Brown killed, he sprains his ankle,
Yep.
then you followed up by running an actual play when you said you were not going for it.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are we doing? Then you're right, the defensive thing as well. It's just it can't be that bad. It cannot.
Yeah. And on the other end, Bo Nix, like in that game, Bo Nix is equally as electric. He makes his Bo Nix rookie mistake still. But man, did you see was the game tying one?
The throw
That
to, I think it was Sutton in the end zone.
yeah, it was the longest throw of the season. It was like 60 something
Yep.
yards.
Oh,
He
yeah.
I like Maybe I didn't know he had that in him, but he's got an arm on him. And the more I watch him, the more and more impressed I am. If he can kind of turn into something for Sean Payton, and maybe like they're kind of do a Drew Brees, Sean Payton 2.0 thing for him, and that he kind of has some Drew Brees traits in him, I think.
He does have that kind of quick release, the accuracy at the short to medium range, and I think it's been absolutely incredible for Denver. I mean, we sat here all of last year shitting on Sean Payton, and now he looks like he's going to the playoffs, like a kind of
Yeah.
a like a real football coach. I think the Bo Nix thing, he's my rookie of the year. I know it's kind of probably neck and neck between him and Jaden Daniels because the Commanders keep winning games.
Yeah.
I don't know when these awards are officially cast, but maybe you give the award away to whichever one of them wins a playoff game on the road, if either of them do.
Yeah, I don't think either of them do, because right now it looks like the Commanders are gonna have to play. Actually, they probably have the better chance, to be honest.
They're the seven seed, no?
Oh, are they the 7 seed now? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're
I think they
definitely.
will be.
So they'd have to go to Philly.
Hey, they've beaten Philly once.
Yeah, I guess so. It required Kenny Pickett. So is it for sure that Jalen Hurts is going to be good for the playoffs for
Yeah,
them?
I think so. I think this is kind of they're using that concussion as an excuse to not play him, because obviously you can't just like you can sit your starters, but you have to give them a reason for why they're out, and they're just I think they
Right.
just threw a concussion out there for Hurts. I assume he's playing.
Okay. Although Kenny Pickett looked great against what was left of.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, I guess last thing for the NFL, maybe looking ahead at week 18. It's just week 18's always the I'm looking at this. The Baltimore Ravens are 20-point favorites over the Browns.
Yeah, I saw
That might be
that.
the biggest number I've ever seen in the NFL.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty dang close to the biggest number ever. So for them, they're automatically, aren't they automatically the, oh no,
No,
the Steelers
they
can
need
get
to
it
win
if
it.
they lose.
They need to win it. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, the Bengals are.
Who are the Browns even starting at court? They can't be throwing DTR out there
No, they're
again,
not.
right?
Somebody else. They said it's like, I don't know. It's not. It's bad. I've heard the name. Like, it's not quite like a Nathan Peterman levels of bad, but like, it's bad.
Yeah. And they said ownership said like the beginning of December that they're not going to move on from Stefanski, and like I don't nor like he was, I think, coach of the year 2 years ago or something like that. And it's not, he didn't make the decision to pay Deshaun Watson like every single penny the owner owns
Yeah.
and for him to just not play any downs in meaningful football. But I really like this is pretty bad for him to be guaranteed a job with 4 or 5 weeks left in the season.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll say, just because I think it's like there's rumors of this, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, I think are probably the biggest losers of the season, in my opinion, where
Definitely.
you torpedo an entire franchise. You've got Garrett Wilson apparently requesting a trade. This so-called super defense of theirs has completely fallen apart without Robert Saleh. You got the head coach and the GM fired. You brought your buddy over, and now it's apparently that the relationship between Rodgers and Woody Johnson, the owner, is so bad that he's done. He's like, this might be my last NFL game. There are rumors the Jets want to move on regardless. So all of that going back to that stupid Skype call with Pat McAfee where Devontae Adams just shows up with that football on his hands and he's got that smug smile and it's like, dude, you went 2-10 together. Like, shut the fuck up.
And they were already like, they were like, we're gonna turn around this 2-5 team up right now. Like, what? Like, what?
So that's kind of my early loser of the season. Maybe something will happen that's so egregious in week 18 that it changes, but I just don't see that
Do
happening.
you think that, like, because this was only one season and he had the Achilles tear last year, that everyone will forget that that year even happened, that you won't remember that? Like, there's certain players that they end so poorly and either so abruptly or so poorly for a good chunk of their career that you forget the good times. Like, I think about Miguel Cabrera. I think about Russell Wilson, had it not been for somewhat of a resurgence this year. But, like, do you think people will think of Aaron Rodgers that way? I kind of don't think so, just because it was a 1 year thing. And I think it'll be out of people's minds very, very quickly.
I think it'll be somewhere in the middle where, like you said, I think the timing of him being bad has not been long enough for them to forget. And
Right.
even though that last year in Green Bay ended with missed playoffs, if you go 1 year further back, he was the MVP of the entire league.
Right.
So I do think he's done enough to kind of still be remembered for Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers. But I think that's a very good question to ask of like what other players, if like you sat there and give it some thought, did you forget the good times and you only remembered where like they looked like they couldn't move?
Yeah. Miguel Cabrera is the first one that comes to my mind.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah. Yeah. The other, like I said, the other one that the football one is Russell Wilson for me, but he's kind of changed that a little bit. But Aaron Rodgers goes and tries to play another year for somebody else. Like, he's back on, like, maybe Brett Favre is kind of the same way, right? Like, I kind of remember him as like the failed playoff, although they made like the playoffs, though. They just kind of
Didn't
failed
Brett
the
Favre's
playoffs.
last season end of the NFC title game? If I'm not
Yeah.
mistaken, with the Vikings.
Yeah, I guess that's not a total failure, especially relative to this, but
I mean, so I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna end this off with, if you've made it this far, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And give us a think about and let us know who your player who played way too long and you remember the bad, not the good.
yeah, I like that. Let's end it on that.